This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Moody Chisholm. Moody's the CEO of UT Health East Texas Medical Center and System. Moody, can you take a moment and introduce yourself, and then we'll talk to you about leadership and a number of other issues.
Yes, sir. I'm again, Moody Chisholm. I'm the president and CEO of UT Health East Texas.
And tell us about UT Health East Texas. I know part of the University of Texas system. Tell us about UT Health East Texas.
Yes, sir. I'd be proud to. We serve the communities north of Houston and east of Dallas in Texas, a large number of counties and cities that comprise East Texas. And so UT Health East Texas was established in March of 2018 when the assets of the former East Texas Medical Center and what was then University of Texas Health Northeast, they were acquired by a partnership between the University of Texas and Ardent Healthcare. And, of course, the University of Texas brings to the partnership their world-renowned research, their education, and their clinical excellence. And Ardent, who manages and owns 31 hospitals across the country, brings quality improvement, efficient operational management, a positive work environment, and a unique focus on service to this partnership that oversees a comprehensive health system with the full continuum of care, really. It includes 10 hospitals, 7 trauma care centers, one of those being a level 1 trauma center at our Tyler Hospital, and 2 critical access hospitals. We serve a lot of rural communities, so we have some small hospitals, freestanding emergency centers. We have a big focus on wellness, so we have 10 fitness and wellness and rehab centers. We own a comprehensive health plan services company called Health First. We have a fleet of more than 50 ambulances and 4 helicopters, more than 70 clinics, home health, skilled nursing, inpatient rehab, long-term acute care. It's a very comprehensive network, but most importantly, it includes more than 7,000 wonderful caregivers and hundreds of physicians, including, of course, University of Texas faculty, independent community physicians, and some a large number of 501A employed physicians. So that's a quick snapshot of UT Health.
Oh, fantastic. And talk for a moment about a few of the things that you're most proud of with respect to the health system.
Well, I tell you, I am most proud of our ability to create, number one, a safe environment for patients. Number two, to expand the academic commitment that University of Texas has made but wants to grow here in East Texas, because, you know, there is a huge shortage, as you probably know, of physicians for rural communities. And Texas, when you look at the data, has a lot of communities that don't have any access to a number of specialties. So University of Texas has made a big commitment to expand that academic commitment here, and we've already been able to significantly grow the residency programs here. We just started a new internal medicine and general surgery residency program, and the legislature and the Board of Regents of the University of Texas just announced a huge commitment to build a new medical school here in East Texas. So we're really proud of that, and we're just proud of the fact that we've been able to financially stabilize these organizations. They were really struggling, and we've been able to be very successful in turning around the financial stability for the long term for this health system.
Thank you. And take a moment, for those of us that are not that familiar throughout the country, the geography in the area, you mentioned a lot of rural, some not rural, the heat, what's it like there, and also what are you seeing in terms of COVID-19 now in your community?
Sure. Well, you know, I guess if you know anything about Louisiana, we are very close to Louisiana, so, and we're very close to Houston, and I think both Louisiana and Houston have a reputation for being hot and muggy, and I'm from Florida originally, so it doesn't bother me, but it is hot here and it is muggy. but it's a beautiful rolling hills environment. So you have rolling green hills. A lot of people picture this as almost like West Texas, which is very desert looking, but this is a rolling green hills with lots of pine trees and oak trees, and it's a beautiful area. We are, from a COVID-19 standpoint, we are dealing with quite a spike in COVID cases right now. Across my 10 hospitals, I have more than 90 inpatient COVID patients right now across our hospitals, and my largest competitor here in the market has an equal number, if not more. So we are facing quite a spike here. We've been working hard to get the community to practice safe practices like wearing masks and distancing and washing their hands. And I know that you hear that everywhere, but if we could get more people to practice that, it would make a big difference in reducing the spread of this disease.
And do you see things starting to peak there and move in the right direction, or are we still some distance away from that?
I think we're still some distance away from it. You know, Scott, I look every week at the numbers, and I'm hopeful if I see it start to decline a little bit, I become hopeful. But, you know, 2 weeks ago, we were in the 90s. Yesterday, we dropped at the end of last week down to the low 80s. But then I noticed yesterday we popped back up into the 90s again. So we can't seem to consistently show a downward trend right now.
Got it. And how is treatment going for patients? The reports I hear is at least significantly better than it was in March and April for COVID patients. What are you seeing across your health system?
Yes, sir. Now, these are, as you know, these are long length of stay patients. That's one of the things that changes things quite a bit. We watch our length of stay a lot, and it has obviously been impacted by what are commonly at least 3 week lengths of stay and sometimes quite a bit longer. But the mortality rate has gone down as compared to the number of people we're admitting. So I do think we're improving our treatment protocols, and that is reducing the mortality rate. But still, you know, we are seeing mostly, if you look at, I looked at it recently, and more than 90% of the patients were over 40 years of age. So it is still primarily affecting those that are, I don't want to call over 40 old, but it's primarily affecting those over 40.
One of the things that happens is the older that you get, the younger you think 40 is.
Cause that's right.
People like me, you know, at one time I thought 40 was, you know, old. Now I think that, oh, that's a youngster.
I do too.
Exactly. So then when you look at the next 6 to 12 months, this system was put together the last couple of years. It's got these, you know, the great combination of Ardent and UT. What are you looking at as your top priorities for the next 6 to 12 months or so?
Sure. Well, you know, for us, and one of the things that's important to me is consistency. And for us, one of the ways we remain consistent is safety is always our number one priority. Keeping our patients safe and keeping our caregivers safe is always our number one priority. But one of the things that we've had to pivot a little bit on right now is how do we effectively and compassionately serve these COVID-19 patients and continue to provide a safe environment for the treatment of people that need care for cancer, for cardiac issues, for diabetes, for orthopedics. I mean, we have really focused on how do we make this how do we make sure that the community perceives us as safe for the treatment of those other conditions, because we can't afford to have people putting off their needed care in these chronic disease areas and in many other areas. You've probably seen the data that the number of ambulance arrivals where they're having to resuscitate an individual or where the patient is already dead has significantly increased because people are putting off the care they need. And so we're working on virtual waiting environments where patients can, rather than sitting in a crowded waiting room, they can use an app on their phone to take care of all their paperwork and to be notified when the doctor's ready to see them, or when they're ready to step in for their GI procedure and have the prep for that, or when they're ready for their x-ray, or whatever the treatment is that they need. We're working on creating that virtual environment so they can stay out of the waiting room and come right in and get their care. We're also separating the treatment areas, the respiratory treatment areas, respiratory ERs, where we can see the potential COVID patients separately from all the other ER patients. We're doing the same in the hospital, different caregivers caring for our COVID patients than the caregivers that are caring for all of our other patients. So we're trying to find ways to create an environment that feels safe for our patients. And then finally, you know, the one other area that I'll say is a big priority for us is making sure we stay focused on our strategic plan for this year. You know, when COVID hit, it really created this general malaise, and maybe it froze us in place at some point, but for several months, our team's been working hard on pushing forward with the plans that we had intended for this year, like the expansion of the medical school and the residency program. And an example of where we had to pivot because of this pandemic is the EMR we were going to be implementing this year. We were going to convert from Cerner to an Epic EMR in October of this year, and we had to put that off until April of next year because of the complexity of providing elbow-to-elbow support and training for a new EMR. So those are our big focus areas right now.
Thank you very, very much. With safety number one, staying focused on strategic plan, making pivots where you got to make them, making patients comfortable to get the care they need as the world deals with COVID and the system deals with COVID as well, but making sure you don't put off heart care, stroke care, orthopedics, everything else. Another question for you, Moody. The question is advice for leaders. What advice do you give other leaders, emerging leaders? What are a couple points of advice you'd give for emerging leaders?
Sure. Well, first, you know, like any good CEO, I steal ideas. And I happen to think that Patrick Lencioni's Five Dysfunctions of a Team lays out a great template for the foundation of a healthy leadership team. But rather than going through all that, I'll tell you that for me personally, I also think tone, leadership tone, consistency, self-awareness, and sincerity are really important characteristics of a leader. And just to touch on them briefly, the tone you set as a leader of the organization really impacts all those around you on your leadership team. And so it's important that, for example, when you face something like COVID-19, that you don't face it with anxiety. That's going to send the wrong message to your team, and you can choose how you respond to things. So I think having a positive approach to challenges like COVID-19 sets the right tone for your entire leadership team. And I think consistency is so important. I don't want my team members to have to wonder if today's a good day to talk to Moody. You know, we have to make sure we are stable as leaders in our behavior and consistent, and that we treat people respectfully in a consistent manner. We listen, we look them in the eyes, and that really helps to develop that trust that Patrick Lencioni talks so much about. Self-awareness, you know, one of the problems is if you're not very self-aware, you may not know that you're not self-aware. So it's important that you find somebody you can trust to help you with your areas of opportunity for improvement. That may be your spouse, but also somebody at work. And then finally, I'd say it's so important to sincerely care about the people you work with and about what you're doing and about the people you're caring for. I think if you sincerely care, boy, that really carries the day with your team and with all those that work in the health system that you're leading.
You've talked about tone, being the same person that shows up every day, empathy, caring, and so forth, and so important. And I think what's happened over the last couple of decades people become clearer and clearer as we moved out of complete command and control structures that these types of personal qualities are so, so important to leadership. But let me ask you a question, you know, and this is a somewhat facetious question, but if given the name Moody, do you have to overcompensate to show the same tone every day?
That's a great question. I don't think so. I have led in the same manner, whether I'm leading a for-profit system or a not-for-profit system, whether it's a faith-based system or not a faith-based system. I've led with the same approach since I started in my first CEO opportunity. And so that is sincere. It's a very honest approach. And I work very hard because I do care about our success as an organization and about making sure that each person knows that they're valued, whether it's a patient or a caregiver in our organization, that they know they're valued and appreciated. And I think some of that comes from the fact that I started out in housekeeping after college. And I appreciate so much the folks there that often go underappreciated and are anonymous, and the amazing commitment that they make to keeping our patients safe and creating a clean environment.
Well, fantastic. Moody, just a pleasure to visit with you today. Just fantastic. I love your thoughts on priorities. I love your thoughts on advice for leaders. So much of what you say just resonates and is so right on. Thank you so much for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast today, and continued good luck at UT Health East.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.